Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan on News Talk.
Dervla Burke O'Connor, who I know many of you will know was part of the band Crystal Swing with her mum Mary and brother Derek, is with me here on the line today, because Dervla has had to put her music career aside to care for her son Paul full time. Dervla, you're very welcome to the programme. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. Will you tell us a little bit about Paul's condition?
I will, and thank you, Andrea, for asking me to come on this morning. I'm absolutely delighted to be on. I sure can. And look, before I start talking about Paul, you know, I can only just share from our own experience, Andrea, and I don't claim to know everything or have all the answers, but this is just a real lived experience. And it's, you know, it's not easy speaking about my child like this, but this is the reality of the situation for ourselves and for so many other families. And we love Paul. But a little bit about him. Paul is 9 years old and he has a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder. So he's totally nonverbal and he has an intellectual disability. So Paul would be a full-time care 24/7 around the clock. And as I said, we love him. We adore him so much, along with his little sister. But most definitely, you know, having a child like Paul is very demanding and it's very hard and challenging and it can be very isolating. Because Paul, you know, he has no friends or no social skills, and he'd be a complete flight risk. He has no interests. He sees no danger at all. And then, of course, he has no verbal communication. And with a child like him, routine is just everything. So any little change can really, really upset him, which can lead to severe meltdowns and aggression. And he needs help and support with absolutely everything. So, you know, dressing himself, toileting, brushing his teeth, washing his hands, feeding him. Then there's the danger with Paul that he swallows non-food items. So he puts everything into his mouth bar food. He has a very, very limited diet. That's a huge challenge as well. And we've actually ended up in A&E with Paul for choking on occasion. And then it can, you know, it's very difficult taking him out in public places or busy environments. And I find that quite hard now myself, particularly as he gets older and bigger, it's becoming very challenging. And I can actually find that my own nervous system can kind of go on high alert being out with him. So I need the support of my husband, or at least just to have someone with me in the event of something going wrong, you know. He has severe meltdowns, so he punches himself or he'll lash out at others. He'll hit his head off the ground, you know, he'll roar and cry hysterically. And we've basically had to totally adapt our house for Paul. We've had to basically strip everything bare. You know, we've taken down mirrors and we took a stove out of our kitchen because he was actually hitting his head off the stove and he was kicking the glass on it, and it was just too dangerous to light it up, obviously. Anyway, he's broken multiple TVs, there's holes in the walls, he's kicked in kitchen cupboard doors, and we've had to take down glass doors. And then in his own bedroom, we actually have to lock him into his bedroom. And of course, no one wants to do that. We don't want to do that at all, but it's for his own safety because he's kind of liable to do anything. He could ramble out into the landing at night. And, you know, my fear is that he could throw himself out over the banister. And in fact, in his room, we have straps across his wardrobe doors. Because he's actually through meltdowns, you know, he gets very upset, and he actually pulled a wardrobe door down on top of himself a couple of months ago. And it's a really, really heavy door. And to be honest, I thought the child was nearly dead from it. I got an awful fright and he got an awful fright.
Yeah.
So, you know, he's liable to do anything. And then he needs nappy changes throughout the night. And, you know, he has pads on his bed, so they need changing and washing. And he does a lot of rambling around at night, and sleep can be an issue as well. So Paul could just decide at 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning that, you know, he's ready to get up and start the day. And that's it. So, you know, it and then of course then for him going to the next day, it can affect him then because he's tired, and then you know, I'm tired too. So it's kind of just, it's a continuous it's like being on a hamster wheel, really, Andrea. It's very hard, you know, and again, I can't reiterate how, you know, how much I love
Paul. Oh, sure,
and
I know.
This Darla, is most certainly not saying poor me, and I'm most certainly not looking for any sympathy. I'm just trying to highlight the reality.
Yeah,
of it, you know?
And I think it's really important. You know, it's incredible, Dervla, for you. I think for you to, you know, to just, you're talking just so openly about, like, this is yeah. the reality. This is your reality. Yeah. This is what day to day life is like at home, in your house, with Paul, with the family. And for you, it's now, and your husband, it's about trying to manage that.
Most certainly, you know, and like with Paul, obviously, I'm his mother. So there's a maternal bond, and there's a love there. There's an emotional connection between us. But there is, I suppose, to the side of that, I am his carer as well, you know, because we have a neurotypical child called Hannah, and she's wonderful. So I kind of, you know, we've experienced both sides of the coin in rearing a normal child and Paul. And it's very, very different rearing a child like Paul, because being a carer, there's no breaks, and it's around the clock care. And, you know, it can be very physically demanding. It's very mentally demanding and challenging and isolating. And I suppose, you know, I'm continually trying to advocate and to be Paul's voice. He doesn't have a voice, and he's a very vulnerable little person, along with all of Paul is just one of many, you know. There's as we say, there's loads of Pauls out there, and I hope that, you know, that it makes people feel less alone. And it's extra hard, I suppose, when it's someone that you love deeply, you know. And as well, it's very hard. Paul doesn't have a voice. When Paul is sick or in pain, he can't tell me, and we don't know what's wrong with him, and we're trying to guess everything, you know. And really, I suppose, if for anyone who may not have experienced this, you know, it's very hard to imagine the reality of it. And, you know, I've met so many families and spoken to families that are in the same boat, but they have adult children and they've been living through this for years. And, you know, it's a huge worry. Like, Paul has been diagnosed with the last 7 years, and when he was 2 years old, he was diagnosed. But, you know, I really, there's a long road ahead with him, but I do worry so much about his future, particularly, you know, if I become ill, what will happen? What will happen him?
Yeah.
What if he becomes too big, too strong, too physically aggressive? What will happen?
And like all of the things you've detailed, Dervla, you know, to us today, these are, you know, obviously given Paul's condition, but like these are the actions of Paul at 9 years of age. I'm sure for you it's a concern, and you know, I'm sure you're already, not a concern, but I suppose you're probably thinking about, what is this going to be like at 19 and 29?
Most certainly. And to be honest with you, Andrea, it has caused me huge anxiety. Honest to God, I feel sick in my stomach every day thinking about it. It keeps me awake at night, and I'm so worried about, you know, as you say, as he grows physically, will we be able to cope with him? Will we be able to manage him? Like, I want to be able to mind Paul until I'm 90 years old.
Yeah.
But the reality is that may not be the case, you know, and I don't know what is on the cards for Paul. There's no roadmap for him,
no.
You know. So,
and what supports, if any, do you get, Dervla, at the moment?
Well, look, I mean, We're getting very limited supports, Andrea, as is everyone else right across the board. I'm only speaking from our perspective
yeah.
If you were to ask me, what does Paul need? Like, what he needs is he needs continuous therapeutic intervention. So, like, he would need speech-language therapy and occupational therapy on the regular. It needs to be continuous for the rest of his life. And there's no way that you could actually fund the amount of therapy that he needs. I suppose a big one for us at the moment is, Paul has his diagnosis is autism spectrum disorder, but there is definitely a whole lot more going on there, particularly with his mental health, and we do believe that he has multiple diagnoses, and so we're waiting with the last couple of years to be seen by CAMHS. We're waiting on a psychiatrist to, you know, speak to us and to maybe diagnose him with whatever is going on in there. You know, we are receiving a little bit of respite care for him, but not nearly enough, and he needs very specific respite care as well, you know, and he needs to be in a setting where things remain the same. You know, as I say, he can't deal with change and he needs one-to-one care. You know, as I previously mentioned, there's the concern about what's going to happen as he gets older. The possibility is maybe Paul will need long-term care. We don't want him to go into residential care, but we don't know,
and
you
Do you have much engagement with the service providers, with the HSE? Is that something, because you are the full-time at home support, Dervla, you know, are those conversations already happening in the background?
Oh my God, look, I could go back and that would actually be a whole other programme we could dedicate to this, Andrea. There's so much to say on it that I won't be able to focus on today, but in a nutshell, they're going back over the last 7 years. There has been so much back and forth, you know, communicating with the HSE and various different people trying to get services for Paul. And it's been the biggest struggle. It's been so hard. And I suppose what can lead to that then is actual carer burnout. And I really don't mind sharing my experience. This is just me being completely honest wearing my heart in my sleeve. I think I've been burnt out for the last number of years anyway, but over the past 9 months, I actually had become very unwell myself, and my own health took a bit of a turn, my physical health, and I was in hospital and I had surgery. And so I was actually very unwell for quite a while. And Tim, my husband, and my own mother, my mother Mary, she's actually great with Paul. But my dad actually has Parkinson's disease, so she's trying to look after him. It's a big juggle.
Yeah.
But anyway, Tim and my mum, of course, were trying to manage with Paul, and you know, Tim was trying to work, and then we have Hannah, and they were trying to look after me. And of course, they did a fantastic job, but it was an absolute disaster, Andrea, because Paul can go through very aggressive spells, which he did at that time. I suppose there was big change. Mama wasn't there and he couldn't understand why. So with all that, then I actually had a complete mental breakdown, and I was actually hospitalized myself. And one day I was in a meeting for Paul. Again, of course, my life revolves around him, and I got severe chest pains, and I actually thought that I was genuinely having a heart attack. I was in so much pain, I was taken away by ambulance, and thankfully it was confirmed that it was not a heart attack, but it was, they confirmed that it was brought on by severe stress, which is actually very frightening. And now I suppose I'm very aware and I'm hypervigilant. I'm almost obsessed now that anything could happen to my own health at any time, and or to Tim. And this has increased my anxiety around that hugely, that I'm nearly obsessed with dying, you know. And I'm on anti-anxiety medication now, all because of that. And so,
God love you.
You know, this is what it leads to, you know. And so I hope maybe by today, by having this chat with you, that maybe this interview might reach the right people, and that they would really listen to carers' real lived experiences, you know, and just act on it. It's time for change now.
You need support as well. You know, because I'm listening to you talking about Paul, and obviously the impact that this has had on you personally and your own health, physically and mentally, and you and the other parents out there. I'm sure that your story resonates with them, Dervla, this afternoon. You guys need support as well. You know, and that's the reality of this. When people talk to you, you know, about Paul, and when you meet kind of friends and people at the down at the, you know, in the town and various people as you bump into them, do they are people quick to, you know, I suppose, offer kind of unsolicited help, advice? Are people helpful? Are they supportive? I mean, what's the kind of general reaction you get?
Well, I suppose it's kind of there's a lot of confusion out there about autism, and autism, I suppose, is, as you know yourself, Andrea, it's a huge spectrum. So there's a saying out there, if you've met one person with autism, you've met one person with autism. No two are the same. And unfortunately, our little boy, Paul, is on the other end of the spectrum. And I meet a lot of people on the street all the time, and I hear people saying to me, you know, oh, well, I have a neighbour now and she has a daughter who's in mainstream school now and she's flying it, and oh, she's getting on so well and she's completely verbal, and yours will be the same because she's like that, you know. And I try to explain that actually, no, Paul will never live independently and he will never lead a normal life. And I think there's a lot of confusion out there. And I think the media as well have a lot to answer for that, because, and what I'm going to say here now, I really don't want to offend anybody.
No,
and
well,
I want
you won't
to
offend me at all.
By what
go on
I
ahead.
Say,
yeah.
That I suppose the media needs to stop glamorizing autism, especially for those like my son who will never be able to lead a normal life. And like, autism has actually ruined Paul's life. And as his mother, again, I can't say I love him, but I hate his autism. And it's taken everything away from him. It's taken his voice. It's taken, you know, his thinking process. It's taken, he can't do anything. He can't meet any basic life skills. And it's this narrative out there at the moment that autism, you know, is cool. It's my superpower. It's kind of trendy, I suppose, to be autistic. Now, I don't mean that in an offensive way.
No,
and
I know
I
you
totally
don't.
Understand that everyone with the diagnosis has challenges.
Absolutely.
And autism seems to be, it seems to be in most families now, but our autism is totally different.
It's, from listening to you over the last 13, 14 minutes, Dervla, you know, I think anyone can hear about your day-to-day life and all that comes with that. But is the word superpower, is that a term that is often kind of leveled at you?
Yes, you know, and when people say things to me as well, people really don't mean it to hurt me or to offend me. But I just think that people don't understand the huge spectrum that's there. And really, I suppose we say at home, Paul probably shouldn't even be diagnosed as autistic. Maybe he should have a completely different name, because you really can't compare any two people that are autistic. And it can be upsetting, you know, because I know in my heart and soul that Paul won't ever lead a normal life, you know, like his little sister will. And but we will love him and care for him forevermore. But I think there just needs to be more clarity on what people on the other end of autism are experiencing, and there needs to be more understanding.
Do you feel it is being glamorized?
I absolutely do think it's being glamorized. And I think, you know, even to bring it back to the services, like, I'm not saying my child is more important than any other child. He's most certainly not. Everyone is just as important. But like, he's receiving the same services as maybe someone that is more high functioning. And that seems completely wrong, you know, because he needs really specific one-to-one intervention, and he will need therapies, and he will need supports going forward. And again, in the event should Paul end up in something like long-term care, which again, we you know, I've said it already, we don't want that to happen. Like, Paul can't just be landed in somewhere like that. For people like him, things need to be a really slow progression. You know, it needs, things like this for him need to happen over time. Things take a long time with Paul, you know. Even to go away from that, things like putting on his shoes, he can't do that. You know, he can't tie the zip on his coat. He can't do anything. He can't feed himself. He can do nothing for himself. So when I hear that autism is a superpower, it really hits a nerve. And sometimes I just want to cry when I hear it, you know, because when I look at him, that's not the situation, you know. Or you hear sometimes, but he doesn't look autistic. He looks perfect, you know, which he does. And if I may say so for myself, I think he's absolutely gorgeous. He's got a head of blonde hair and blue eyes, and he's beautiful. But just because he looks normal doesn't mean that he is normal. And sometimes I actually even wish that Paul maybe you know, it's an awful thing to say, but that maybe he was more physically, that you could see that there's so many things wrong inside, you know, that he almost looks so perfect that you'd never realize it until you're living with him, you know. And he's not the only one. There's loads of Pauls out there, you know, and loads of families going through this.
And just maybe, because I can, obviously, like, Dervla, I mean, for anyone not in your situation, we don't know what it's like. And I know from just, I suppose, talking to other parents, they will say that over the years that, you know, until you live a day in my shoes, it's very, very hard for other people to make judgment when they don't understand what you and your husband, Tim, what life is like at home. And I think you've detailed that very well today. And I think you've given us a, you know, a really honest appraisal of what life is like. Can I ask you about your little daughter, Hannah? Does she understand Paul's condition?
Hannah knows that there's something different about Paul. And the way we put it to Hannah, and she always says, you know, he's special. Paul is special. But it's very hard for a sibling like Hannah living with someone like Paul, because he can, I suppose, when he has his meltdowns, first of all, it can be very terrifying. It's very scary. You know, he'll go into her room and he's broken so many of her toys and, you know, torn apart her room. And obviously he doesn't understand that and he can't help that. But for her, that's very difficult. And
what age,
you know,
is she again, Dervla?
She's eight. And, you know, she is actually excellent. And I think in the long road, it's going to make her a very strong and empathetic person. And so I think in the long road, it will make her a much better person. But it is hard because, you know, Hannah can't have friends over when she wants. We can't just say, look, let's head off to Spain next month and we'll go on our holidays. That doesn't work. In fact, we tried it once with Paul. We took him once on holidays to Spain and we'll never do it again. And it was so stressful. The flight, and yeah, we'll never do it again. But my point is, I don't care about not getting to experience these things. But Hannah, I suppose you're only a child once, and she's missing out on a lot of things. And sometimes the focus can be very much on him as well. You know, we're constantly fussing around Paul, and it's easy to forget about poor old Hannah. And, you know, sometimes she can be in the background a little bit, but we really do try to give her that time and to make sure she knows how special she is. And it's very important for parents to let their other children know how special they are, and they're just as much loved as the child with special needs. But it's not to say that it's very, very hard.
Dervla, it's difficult, you know, to even kind of to know what to say to you, because I can't I suppose offer any comfort to you, or tell you that things are going to change or that more supports or services are going to become available. But I do want to thank you for joining us today and for explaining your situation so honestly, you know, and speaking
so
openly today, you know.
And thank you for having me, and I'm only too delighted to speak about it.
Yeah.
And just before we finish, Andrea, would you mind if I give one quick little mention?
Yeah.
I'm actually delighted to be a guest speaker at the lovely Laois Homecoming Festival on Saturday, the 5th of September. All Abilities Ireland are holding an event for those with additional needs. Now, not just with autism, right across the board. And I believe myself and other parents will be sharing our own lived experience of having a child with special needs. And as I say, look, all I can do is share our experience, but it might be of some comfort to someone else with a child.
I'm sure it will.
And I'm looking forward to listening to and meeting other people travelling a similar path. And it's all about creating awareness. And actually, the children can come too. I believe there's going to be messy play, and they will be taken care of.
Good.
So this is between 12 and 2 p.m. on Saturday, the 5th of September. And for anyone who would like to investigate further on that, check out allabilities.ie or lovelyleashhomecoming.ie.
Dervla, thank you so much for your time today in the programme. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Andrea. Lovely to speak to you.
And I really mean that when I say fair play to Dervla, you know, for being so open and I think so brutally honest, actually, about what life is like at home and her just day-to-day circumstances, and calls for more supports for her son's condition. And I'm sure there's many other parents, and I can tell there is, because there's texts coming in from other mums and dads out there, you know, who Dervla's story really hits home to them and find themselves in a very similar position. We're going to come back to this because I do want to come to Dervla's text or to the text about this situation. And if you want to share your own story with us today, maybe your circumstances, if they're like Dervla's, are somewhat different, drop us an email. It's lunchtimelive@newstalk.com. We'll come back to this a little bit later. The messages haven't stopped coming in. They're still coming in about Dervla Burke O'Connor, who I spoke to at the start of the show today. This texter's got in touch to say, I'm absolutely astounded by Dervla. It's genuinely the most honest interview that I've heard in a long time. She has literally stopped me in my tracks today. I'm an SNA in a secondary school and I love my job, but my job has a start and a stop time. But for parents in the same situation as Dervla, this is their whole life. How anyone could give that level of care and attention without it affecting their own personal health would be an impossible feat. Anything and everything should be done to support these families. Another listener tells me, my nephew has autism and I see the strain that my sister is under every single day. A diagnosis has a huge impact on all family members and there are simply not enough resources or supports out there. This texter says, I've just listened to Dervla on the show and I found her interview incredibly honest, inspirational and heartbreaking. I don't have a child with additional needs myself, but I do work as a bus escort for 4 children with autism, all with very different needs. And like Paul, they require almost constant care and support with basic things like feeding, dressing, going to the toilet, and even keeping themselves safe. It can also be flight risks and a danger to themselves. And I'm in regular contact with parents and my heart genuinely goes out to them. They are devoted, loving parents, but they are absolutely exhausted. You can see it in their faces every day. I also see the impact on siblings and family life. And Dervla's so right that more needs to be done. The level of support available to these families is completely inadequate for the level of care that they provide each single day. I have huge admiration for Dervla for speaking so honestly and shining a light on an issue that just deserves far more attention. 087 1400 106 is the numbers, and more than, like, she's a powerhouse. Paul is so lucky to have her as his mum. Parents are dealing with these challenges. They really need an awful lot more supportive care. Another texter, thanks for talking about the different levels of autism today. Our 2-year-old was diagnosed with a syndrome recently and we're starting this roller coaster of appointments, therapies, behavioural problems. People automatically respond with, you know, the person has autism and they're okay. Part of the syndrome includes ADHD and or autism, so this too will be our future. Another listener, I wish the whole nation could stop and just listen to Dervla today, because our 10-year-old son is just like Paul, and our fear is for his future as well. At the moment, we're young enough and thankfully healthy enough to care for him, but the future is so frightening that I do not fear death, because I fear leaving him behind, says this listener. And we'll just take another one for the moment. Like this texter says, just Dervla's so articulate and correct in what she's saying. I feel it has been glamorised. And it means people are neglected because services are limited. And people like Dervla's son, Paul, aren't getting the priority services that he requires. 1800 453 106, that's the number.
Lunchtime Live with Andrea Gilligan. Weekdays at midday on News Talk. Conversation that counts.